Welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Kevin Cruz. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Adrian.
So first of all, Kevin, can you, for our readers and our listeners, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and also about the work that you do?
Sure. I think my background's a little bit eclectic. I consider myself really just a business guy. Started some small businesses that have done pretty well and focused, you know, really, when I say pretty well, part of it is growth, but it's also in terms of something I care a lot about, which is employee engagement. So won Best Place to Work awards as well as Fast Growth awards. But after selling my last company several years ago, I really shifted my priorities, and I'm spending most of my time doing nonprofit board work, but also writing and just sort of preaching and spreading the gospel about the power of leading for engagement. So the last 4 years, I've been trying to give back and trying to write and put down and to learn, because a lot of what I did instinctually as a business leader, you know, I'm learning more about what's behind it, and some new lessons for me too. But a lot of people think, they just assume I've got an HR background or I'm a professor. It's really been the school of hard knocks and just building some small businesses and learning along the way. And then the last few years trying to record that and share it out.
Excellent. So, I mean, I quite like that, because it's more sort of practical, real experience rather than going away and burying yourself in a library for the last sort of 5 years and then producing a big dissertation that nobody reads, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But on to sort of writing, that recently you've published two publications. So in 2011, you published We, How to Increase Performance and Profits Through Full Engagement. And then also latterly, this year, you've published Employee Engagement 2.0. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So tell us about those two sort of publications. I mean, where do they come from? And is that just it's a collection of your ideas? Because you did publish the book, the We book, with Rudy Carzan, who is the CEO of Conexa. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Rudy and I go way back. He's of course the founder of Conexa and CEO today. And Conexa had acquired my companies many years ago. So I was a partner in Conexa, and that's when I first started to sort of understand the theory around employee engagement surveys, and all the rest, even though that wasn't my piece of the business. And I left Conexa years ago to do other ventures, but always kept in touch with Rudy. And when I had some free time on my hands, we sort of reconnected, because Conexa, of course, is one of the world's largest surveyors of employees. They have a real deep research pool for employee engagement. My background, again, was more practical. I had won some Best Place to Work awards. And so Rudy and I got together and we said, all right, how do we ground? There's obviously a lot of books on employee engagement out there, on leadership. You know, how do we take this giant research pool that Conexa has, all the lessons grounded in the science, but make them more accessible to the everyday business person, not to the HR professional?
Right.
And so that book was We. And it's a different book. And there's a part that really is for any individual about how to be more engaged at work in your career and to understand some of the forces that we're all feeling. But then there's a part of the book that's really for the manager or the executive leadership of a company, saying, you know, you can do these kinds of things as a leader to drive engagement. So it's a different kind of book, which did very well. But in the year since that came out, and I was, you know, invited to do talks in different forums, the number one question that came back was, you know, Kevin, this is a great book, but I don't pull it down even further. What do I tell my managers to start doing Monday morning? You know, make this, it might be a good read, but it's still 300 pages. Give me a training book, you know, for my managers. So Employee Engagement 2.0 came out of that question. It's a 50-page, very practical, step-by-step guide as to how to create an engaged team or an engaged workforce in over about a 90-day period.
Excellent. But if I step back a little bit, and I mean, employee engagement, I don't know if it's me, but it seems to be that there's a lot written about it. It's getting a lot of press, both in the business sector, but also in the policymakers, you know, with politicians and things. It's fast rising up the agenda and has been for the last sort of 5 or so years. Why is it that you think that is? What's driving the whole engagement debate?
Yeah, I I'm not so sure. Employee engagement, that notion has been around a long time. Why it's just now starting to take in higher peaks, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, part of it is that depending on which surveys or which research you look at, we are globally at an all-time low in terms of job satisfaction.
Right.
So the Conference Board does their survey of job satisfaction, and it's not just because of the Great Recession. It's about 25 years, it just has been dropping like a rock, lower and lower and lower. So I think that everybody conceptually, you know, talks about the war for talent, the need for great talent in the workplace. But as engagement, as job satisfaction has plummeted to record low levels, the need to address it has become more acute. And I would hope also that, you know, the handful of companies that are that have figured it out are convincing C-level executives that it's not just all hocus pocus. And I think about Doug Conant, who was the CEO of Campbell's Soup for 10 years. They went from, you know, bottom of the barrel in terms of engagement scores to one of the best ever on record. And Campbell's Soup along the way, you know, outperformed their peers and the market overall. So I think as those kinds of cases get out there, those stories get out there, I think you're starting to see interest from higher ups, not just organizational development types or the HR folks.
Do you think it's maybe something to do with that we've got this societal sort of shift thing going on, and it's in line with, you know, this, that, you know, you talk about the Great Recession, the financial crisis, the sort of the questioning of, is this form of capitalism that we're currently pursuing, is it the right way, is it that we're looking for a more conscious sort of way of being in the world and doing business in the world, is it that we're looking for more meaning as our for ourselves as workers or employees? I mean, do you think there's some of that to do with it as well?
Yeah, well, I definitely think that is, those are the sort of the socioeconomic drivers of disengagement. I mean, we can talk practically about bad bosses, and maybe we will, but
yeah.
There's a whole lot of other forces that just as you point out, you know, one of the things we talk about in the book is that this whole idea of pay for time, it's actually a relatively recent phenomenon. I mean, in terms of the course of human history, you know, if you go way back, you know, we ate what we killed that day,
sure.
Right? We became hunter-gatherers, so maybe we ate what we harvested. Even with the development of, you know, villages and a skill set, it was often you lived at your place of work. You know, you might if you were a blacksmith or something, or shoot horses, you know, you would do that there and live above or behind the property. And when someone showed up, you worked. When they weren't there, you didn't work. With
yeah.
The little time was the Industrial Revolution, which people sort of take for granted. But in the whole course of history, that's happened only very recently. And all of a sudden, you know, societies, we had this shift, everyone moving into cities, leaving our families, leaving our places of worship, leaving our support networks, leaving the skills and the jobs that we apprenticed for, that were handed down through generations of our family, and became, you know, workers on an assembly line, wages tied to time actually peaked in around, I think it was 1912. And since then, the amount of variable pay has started to increase more and more as people are saying, okay, let's go back to a type of work where I'm rewarded based on my success, based on my talent. Mm-hmm. And of course, let's make sure I'm doing the right thing, that which engages me, that which, you know, gives me happiness. Some of the most, I mean, you know, you just, it's sort of sad, but look at all the blockbuster antidepressant drugs. You know, what part of the Western population, you know, self-medicates in one form or another? You know, look at so many of the best-selling books are about finding happiness, delivering happiness, getting to happiness. You know, so there's this need of hey, us just sort of separating work from life. You know, oh, it's Monday at 9 a.m. We must go and do this thing we don't care about. We do it for 40 hours or so. We get money. Now we do the stuff we care about on Saturday and Sunday. Clearly, that's not led to very fulfilled lives. And I think that this whole engagement movement from an individual standpoint, it's being driven by some of these factors too.
I think this one of the things that I thought was really interesting and probably the standout piece, or one of the standout pieces in the book, that made the message that you were talking about very different to other things that I've read, is that many people, when they talk about engagement, whether they're talking about it in terms of from a leadership or from an HR perspective, they talk about doing something to employees.
Right.
So it's another process, and we're going to do stuff to you. And I'm thinking, but what was quite refreshing was that actually you almost positioned it as saying, actually, you know what? Engagement is a thing. It's like a conversation that you have with the people that you work with, that the people that you contract with, the people that you work for, all of those different sort of things. So it's a two-way thing, and it's actually you get invited to the table. It's up to you whether you take a seat or not. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why we called the book "We." Is it is this notion that you really do need to all come together. You can't force someone to be engaged. So you could have a very enlightened workplace culture. You could have a great boss that's investing in your growth and giving you recognition and instills a sense of trust. But if you're just in the wrong industry, the wrong job, the wrong company, you still won't feel engaged. And moreover, to your point, we feel that all the emphasis in the past has been on what can the company do for the employee? What can the boss do for the employee? Well, the other side of that conversation is when the employee shows up for work, it's also his or her obligation to try to be engaged. So it is that, I like the way you put it, it's really a conversation about it and getting to it with an equal effort.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would you say are the key components of creating that sort of engagement conversation, say from both sides, whether it's leadership, the company, and also the employee? What are the things that if we're looking at this, what are the things that we should be looking out for or looking to try and sort of develop, would you say?
Yeah, I'll talk about I think some key attributes that drive engagement, but then also a process that can bring it together.
Okay.
On the individual level, we talk about the three P's of the career life bullseye. What is your passion? What is your purpose? And what is the pay? And, a passion is, what do you like to be doing? What gets you out of bed? What do you have fun with? Purpose, though, generally, deep sense of happiness and fulfillment can come from giving back. And to each his own. So for some, it might be, I might be driving a bus every day, but getting a good sense of, delivering people safely and with courteous service. Others might want to, volunteer to help feed the hungry. We have different levels or senses of purpose, but generally happiness will come from feeling that we are making the world a little bit of a better place. But we also recognize that pay is a component, that most of us, we do have a home to pay for. We want to save for our children's education and we want to feel, comfortable in certain ways. Now, there's diminishing returns to how much pay or compensation influences engagement. But it's something that as an individual, you should think about consciously. How much does compensation drive your engagement? How much money do you need to feel secure or engaged? So those are some sort of individual things that each of us should be thinking about in our careers. From a company standpoint and a supervisor standpoint, connects to identify drivers of engagement. There's a lot of them. They're all in the book. But I really challenged that research team and I said, listen, I'm not an HR professional. I'm not an OD psychologist. I'm a busy guy running a business. Managing, just boil it down for me. Give me the one thing. And they came back and said, it's not one thing, but they said over 70% of engagement, how one feels at work, has to do with, it's driven by a sense of growth, recognition, and trust. So a company or a boss needs to instill this sense of growth, some challenge, recognition, feeling that that you're appreciated, and trust. It's a not just ethics, but I trust that the future is bright. So how you get all of this together, though, the three P's and the growth, recognition, and trust, a great way to do it if it's a large organization and there's budget for it. It is good to have the official employee engagement surveys. How engaged are the workers? Where is it variable through different departments or locations? What are those drivers? Let's have some training on it. Let's have some support. When done right, those are dollars well spent.
Uh-huh.
When done wrong, those are dollars that are wasted. But more important than that, it's something that doesn't cost a lot of time and money is, I like to talk or suggest that people do things like do stay interviews or even what I call, giving feed forward instead of feedback, where it's a conversation, just as you said, between the individual and their supervisor and their direct report about, okay, what are your goals? What are the measurable things you're trying to accomplish? And goals have their own time frames. Maybe you've got a goal that's due in a week. Maybe it's a month. Maybe it's a year. You know, let's not just only have this conversation once a year at that annual performance review time.
Yeah.
It's a fluid conversation around real world objectives, but then also have a layer of career development in that. You know, I want to know, Adrian, where do you want to be in 3 to 5 years? You know, what do you need to do to get there? Where are the gaps? Who do you need to know? What experiences do you need to have? And it's not my job as the supervisor to guarantee it to you, but it should be my job to help you with this career pathing process. You know, maybe there's developmental opportunities on projects I could put you on. Maybe I know someone that could be a mentor for you. Maybe it's some training and development. And, you know, if you get this right, if you have the individual thinking about what career path do I want that will lead to engagement, you have the supervisor in the company creating this culture of growth recognition and trust and a conversation about this process. It doesn't take a lot of time or money to do, but it can have a huge impact on employee engagement and morale in the workforce.
It brings me back to the point that I was thinking about earlier on and mentioned, in that it sounds a bit more like actually the relationships that supervisors or leaders or managers need to develop or start to develop with the people that work in their teams is it needs to be more of a, I didn't want to say it needs to be a more of an emotional connection, but I wanted to say it needs to be having more of a familial feel to it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So it's almost like you are sort of almost shepherding somebody, that you are sort of looking after them, that you are looking out for them as well. And that I'm, in a way that, if you like, you want your people to be looking out for what's in the best interest of your customers and doing what's right for them, you should be doing the same thing for you, for the people that are working for you in your teams.
Yes, I think it's critical. I think there's a, you know, there, it's a direct connection. How you treat your employees will be how they treat their customers. I mean, it's just the same. It's the same thing.
The simple stuff, really.
That's right. Common sense that isn't so common, right?
Well, indeed. So we're coming through all this sort of, you know, we still have many firms are stuck in a real sort of production line, industrialized sort of way of doing things. And when we talk about engagement and talk about sort of people and engaging people and investing people in things, and people talk about, many CEOs will talk about our people are our most important assets and things. But then when it comes to how do we do this and how much do we invest in this, some people will deride all of this engagement stuff as mushy nonsense because it's very hard to measure ROI because investment in people doesn't get capitalized, doesn't get put on the balance sheet, all that type of stuff. But so what are, from your experience, what's the real business benefits of implementing an approach that you advocate in the book?
Yeah. I think now there is just a huge amount of evidence that employee engagement does drive real business results. Kinexa's own study shows that companies, publicly traded companies, with the most engaged employees in the top 25% outperformed the bottom. Their stock price outperformed it fivefold. So
right.
500% better stock returns based on employee engagement. Another organization, 6% higher net profit in engaged versus disengaged employees. You know, everyone is many are familiar with the service profit chain. And I like to add a domino to the front of that, or a link to the front of that chain called the employee engagement profit chain. The more someone's engaged, the more discretionary effort they give. And that's what it's really about. You know, you can pay your person the same amount and they can be there for the same amount of hours, but are they giving you that discretionary effort? If they are, you're going to get better levels of service, better levels of quality, better levels of productivity. All that leads to higher levels of customer satisfaction. That drives both repeat business and referrals. So that drives sales. Growing sales, growing profit leads to higher share price. So logically, the engagement service profit chain makes sense. The research backs it. And then the anecdotes, which people seem to respond more to the stories than the,
sure.
than the research. So, I mean, there's plenty of anecdotes. Like, I mentioned Doug Cohen at Campbell Soup went from one of the worst engagement scores in history of the Fortune 500 to a 23-1 engaged to disengaged ratio.
Wow.
10 years. And Campbell Soup, I mean, you know, there was a time where they were almost going to be going out of business, and he really turned them around. So, I mean, I think that the proof is there. I think that you are at a place where, unfortunately, there are many C-level executives who, when they came up through the ranks, it was more of that military industrial thing. We manage tasks, we manage people as resources, and you showed up and you did your job and you collect your paycheck, and that's the end of it. And if you were ambitious, you would maybe try a little harder and climb the ladder, you know. And I think that it's a different day and age now, especially the younger generation coming in. You know, people aren't just working for a paycheck. They're not willing to put up with a hostile workplace environment. And so I think that, again, as engagement levels have dropped, as the new generation has come in, as the success stories have started to percolate, I think that more C-level executives are saying, okay, this is worth investing some time and money into. We do need to care about employee engagement. But of course, it's never enough. I'd love to see them all doing it with passion, and we're not there yet.
This is one of the purposes of the blog is to bang that drum.
That's right. That's great.
The next thing I wanted to do is almost to go back to the more recent book that you have just published, because my next question was, this feels like it may be a big change for many leaders and companies, and if so, where is a good place to start? And that's something that you talked about in Employee Engagement 2.0, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, I think engagement is really driven by your relationship with your boss, you know, with a little bit with the company, but mostly with your direct supervisor. And it's interesting, you know, we the Conexa research, it really uncovered this model of how we feel about a person. This relationship comes from, you know, a sense of growth, recognition, and trust. Now, as an aside, that would be a model that would work if how does a customer feel about a sales representative or a customer service representative?
Yep.
It's how we feel about our marriages, our spouse. You know, how much are we growing, getting recognition, and trust? These are three critical factors really in any relationship. So, you know, I talk about that the frontline managers are really the potential here, and they're really the unsung heroes in the modern organizations. You look at most of the big gurus, Tom Peters and others, that talk about, you know, not enough attention is spent in that frontline middle manager level. I mean, they're the sergeants and the captains that are really running everything, and yet we don't do enough in terms of selection and training and support in this group. But when it comes to engagement, you know, it's all about getting these managers to, you know, instill sense of growth, recognition, trust. Growth talks, it's what we already covered. Feed forward conversations, career pathing conversations.
Yeah.
When it comes to recognition, making people feel appreciated, you know, it's not enough for the companies. You know, companies think they're solving that by doing the rewards programs where, you know, I've been in the company for 10 years, they give me a catalog and I get to pick something from page 42, or they send us all to a picnic in the summer. Hey, that's our way of saying thank you. Well, that's impersonal, right? We want to be appreciated by our peers. Yeah. And by our direct boss. So it's the thank you notes. It's the, you know, it's the daily, weekly interactions that are going to drive some of that. Again, it doesn't cost a lot of money. And when it comes to trust, you know, this is a trust and confidence in the future. So every company has, well, most companies have these giant strategic plans. You know, they go away, consultants, whatever, they make these plans. Sometimes they're huge. Most employees couldn't tell you what the objective is or what the plan is, right? It's too complicated. So the companies that are doing it right are the ones that are boiling it down and making it memorable. So Coca-Cola company, obviously a very large global organization, giant strategic plan. But they've boiled theirs down to one thing. It's called 2020 vision. And that means double revenue by the year 2020. Right. So if you pull someone, you know, out of the Coca-Cola delivery truck or a senior executive, they might have different understandings of the strategy to get there. But if you said 2020 vision, they could both tell you what it means. And there's lots of examples of that. And this is where, you know, when engagement often will drop in after a company does a big layoff, or when there's a merger between two big companies. Well, engagement is dropping because of this uncertainty about the future. I don't trust that I've got, you know, my job or that we're going there. So during these times of change, it's more important than ever before that there's alignment from the top down about what is the strategy. Are we still going to march to that hill we've been saying? If so, great. But then tell them how we're going to get there. Yes, we've laid off 5% of our workforce. It's a terrible thing, but it's because of these reasons. We are still planning to double sales by 2020, and we still plan to dominate in these markets. Let's get back to work. So it's like reassuring people that the future, there is a plan for the future, and it's bright. So, I mean, this is the real impact. I mean, most engagement comes from one's managers. So getting the managers to do these things, like having conversations about, you know, feedback, goals, and careers, having the managers give, making people feel appreciated, giving thanks, and then making sure everybody is in alignment with the big picture, where the company's going and how, you know, how they tie into it. That's really all there is. I mean, it sounds simple, but if you could do that, that's when you get best in class engagement scores.
It sounds like to me, I mean, if you boil it all down, I would turn around and say to supervisors or managers is get out from behind your computer and spend more time with your people face to face.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I have a saying, you know, that most of us are managers of tasks rather than leaders of people.
Yeah.
And that's really the problem in a nutshell. And it's of course the problem's been compounded with the Great Recession in recent years. We're all busier than ever before. We're all doing more with less headcount, less budget. And so, you know, we have the best of intentions. I'm going to be a great manager. I'm going to be a great leader today. You know, I'm going to work on engagement. Then we go into the office. You know, we get down at our desk. And there's already 100 emails waiting for a response. And then, you know, the voicemail light on your phone is blinking. And there's message slips. Your inbox is overflowing. You open your calendar and you're already booked, you know, hour to hour to hour. And so, you know, what do we do? You know, all this stuff. Well, we become managers of tasks and we make that to-do list and we try to get the first three things off, or we answer all those emails because it makes us feel like we're making progress and we're doing our work. But the reality is, you know, that's the distraction. You need to do some of that stuff, but you also need to lead people. And the more you can create an engaged team and get everybody using their discretionary effort, actually the less you've got to do of an urgent nature in your inbox and your phone and everything else. So we need, that's the trick, is how do we become mindful of engagement and our role as a leader every day so that we can be a leader of people rather than just a manager of work and tasks.
It seems to me that a result of that would be to say, you need to learn to say no to more tasks and yes to more people.
Oh, I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
So
you and I are going to have to write a blog post on that.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's a deal.
You write that and then I'll borrow it.
Because it just seems to me that otherwise you end up with this death by meeting and death by sort of targets and deliverables and things. And we get caught up in our own process and system and we forget that that everything is driven by people. There's always a person at the end of a phone, or there's always a person at the end of a computer. Computers don't buy things. People do. Computers don't make things unless they're told. You have to tell a computer what to do in order to make something, right. You know, or a machine to make something. So however much sort of technology there is in the middle, there's always people at either end of the process. And lest we forget that, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's interesting in some of the, you know, the customer service examples you see where people are completely breaking the mold, where for you know, several decades now, everything was about, you know, managing customer service in terms of efficiency. So, you know, call centers and how many calls and the little clock on the wall, you know, how many seconds did it take to answer the call? How many seconds to answer the question? You know, it was all about speed and efficiency. And then you get at companies like, you know, Zappos and others that just said, your job is to delight that customer. So they're calling you. You know, they're calling you in trouble. They're stressed. They have a question. They think we've broken their trust. Your job is to make their day, to fix the problem, to make them love us. And you know it better than I do, but if you can do a recovery of a customer incident,
sure,
they'll be more loyal than before.
Yeah.
You know, so I think this idea of getting back to a more humanistic way of work, and I say, you know, work-life balance, it actually can't exist, but a work-life blend where we are working in things that we enjoy, we're flexible in terms of our approaches. You know, it's the right way, and it delights the employees and the customers alike.
It's brilliant. Kevin, I'm just a little bit conscious of time. What I was going to say was, amongst all of this sort of stuff, what's really interesting, I find really interesting about people that write about this and speak about it and keep, if you like, nudging everybody forward to try and do better. There's so much information and opinion and sort of ideas out there. I mean, what I'm really interested in too is how do people keep up? I mean, how do you keep up?
Yeah,
you know, are there certain things that you read? Is there certain things that you don't read? You know, what is it you do to keep on top of, you know, just this information overload that we seem to have surrounding us right now?
Yeah, it is a interesting problem, because it's not so much that we have a scarcity of time. It's sort of an abundance of information, you know, more information than anyone can digest. And I struggle with it like everybody. But I think, first of all, I do try to consume a lot. And I'm old school in that. I still read a lot of paper. I do subscribe to a lot of magazines, Business Week, Fast Company, The Economist, newspapers, Wall Street Journal, New York Times. All of those things I try to keep up on. Harvard Business Review, even Foreign Affairs. I try to get ideas and follow things that are outside my area. Online, though, I used to read a lot of blogs and would use an RSS reader, and I would track, I mean, in my list are literally hundreds of blogs related to my two main interests, leadership and entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
But even that, on a daily basis, you could spend, 8 hours a day just reading blogs. So what I tend to do is, if there's a blogger or a person that I really want to follow closely, I will give my email address in their system so that it gets delivered in my inbox. So I tend to watch my inbox more than my RSS reader. But what I've been doing increasingly is, I use Twitter as like my personal editorial board. So if I open up my RSS feed today, there would be 250 new articles that I've not read yet. And I could just start chipping away and, you know, click on that, not very good. Click on that, I'll skim. This one's really good. But if I go to Twitter, I follow, you know, certain people that I respect. I like what they've written. I like what they say. And so all of a sudden, it's like my personal editorial board, because I wake up in the morning, and if several people are sending a certain link along on employee engagement, on leadership, and entrepreneurship, I say, that's worth reading. And it might be, Tom Peters says, best article on management I've read in 6 months. Well, okay, based on his endorsement, I'll click that link and I'll read it. If Tom Peters thinks it's brilliant, I'll read it. Other times, I might not know who the people are, but if, like, I search always on employee engagement, and I have a feed column that's running, and you'll see if all of a sudden 20 people have sent a tweet, great article on employee engagement in Forbes this week, click here, then I'll read that one piece. So I'm kind of crowdsourcing the cream of the crop in terms of content out there.
Excellent. I mean, I do something similar, but it's great to, you know, to hear. I don't follow that many. Well, I follow people, but I don't necessarily follow them that intently. I have started to put people more into lists that I can look at, and lists I've found invaluable over the last few months. But it's funny. Twitter is a bit like, is this incredible crowdsourcing curation tool. I think we've only just touched the sides of it right now, but I think it's fascinating the way it's going to develop.
Yeah, I find that I'm still not sure how much Twitter leads to better sales and things like that, as some people would suggest. But I use it to learn from and to meet new people all the time. You know, if there's a good conference that I couldn't attend, I'll open up the hashtag and try to follow along what people are writing, you know, to get key elements. I mentioned, you know, following some smart thinkers, and I think it's a great way to learn, great learning device.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, I always finish these interviews with one question, and that question is, what would you like to shamelessly plug?
Well, I'm not. I mean, you know, I guess I'm selling books. I don't have a lot to plug. The best thing, if people are interested, you know, if we've captured their attention this far, I would say go to kevincruse.com. That's KRUSE.com, and just sign up for my blog and keep in touch.
Fantastic. That's tremendous. And thank you for spending a bit of time with me today. And I will make sure that I'll do a great write up. We'll record it, we'll edit it, we'll link it all up, and then I'll let you know when it goes live.
No, that sounds great. I appreciate that. And once it's live, I'll do my best to amplify it and get you, you know, as many views as possible and listens as well. I think it's a great service that you're doing. It's great, like I said, just to keep the content out there and to nudge. That's the way I feel about it, too. Nudging people along.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Great.